This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. I don't think my guest Josh Rushing ever expected to become a controversial figure. He was a Marine for 14 years and rose to the rank of captain. In 2003, when the U.S. invaded Iraq, Rushing was a press officer with CENTCOM, Central Command, in Doha, Qatar. His job was to represent the Marines to the worldwide media covering the war from CENTCOM, including the Arab TV network Al Jazeera. Rushing was one of the main people in the documentary Control Room, which focused on the media office at CENTCOM and the headquarters of Al Jazeera 10 miles away. One of the threads of the film was Rushing's long conversation with an Al Jazeera journalist, in which Rushing both tried to convey the American military point of view and to understand Al Jazeera's coverage. When the movie was released, the military ordered Rushing not to speak to the press. Soon after, Rushing left the Marines so he could speak out. He did a lot of public speaking, but was unemployed. Just as he was ready to take a PR job, he got a call asking if he wanted to work for the new English-language version of Al Jazeera, which was preparing its international launch. Rushing is now Al Jazeera International's military correspondent. He says he still sees himself as a bridge, helping the Americans and Arabs understand each other. His new book is called Mission Al Jazeera. Josh Rushing, welcome back to Fresh Air. In America, a lot of people assume that Al Jazeera International, the English language version, must have an agenda because a lot of people assume that Arab Al Jazeera has an agenda. So they'd be looking for things like, are most of the stories covered about America, things that are going wrong in America? Do they always show America in a negative light? So for people who are wondering about those kinds of issues, what's your response?
I think that's fair enough. If you go back to the root of that, as you said, they believe Al Jazeera Arabic has an agenda. My simple challenge there would be, have you watched it? Because you can get Al Jazeera Arabic in America. It's on the Dish satellite system. Now, Al Jazeera English, I've watched a lot of. It's on my desk. I see it all day, every day. And I have to say that it's absolutely not true that everything they cover is, you know, negative things about America. As a matter of fact, America often isn't covered. I was at the Virginia Tech shootings, and I was reporting live for about 3 days. That's not my normal beat. I normally cover military affairs, but it was a big deal, and I was around, so I was there to do it. And it was kind of interesting. On the day that Cho's videos went to NBC, I went out to do my live stand-up. And you end up, this is kind of a secret behind television, standing shoulder to shoulder with all these reporters doing lives at the same time. That's because they don't want their cameras to point at each other. So everyone ends up pointing their camera kind of at the same building. And it means you're in a line. So we all go out the top of the hour because that's when everyone's news hit is. Everyone else starts talking at the top of the hour, and I'm waiting. After a few minutes, they stop talking, and I'm waiting. After a few minutes, they take out their earpiece and walk away, and I'm standing there alone. And finally, I go on and I do my live. Well, on that particular day, there were 6 car bombs in Baghdad that killed 225 people. That was our lead, not the videos at NBC. And then there was fighting in Mogadishu. And then there were the elections coming up in Nigeria. And then, oh yeah, number 4 down the list, Josh Rushing's live at Virginia Tech, what happened there today. So I wouldn't say that the coverage is all negative about America. However, I think the nature of news is negative coverage, and that goes for all media and in any country. But what I say is it's very biased toward an international perspective, which I often find surprising and enlightening while I'm there.
As the military correspondent for Al Jazeera International, is there an example of a story that the American press covered in a different way than you did?
Well, I think it was last week or the week before. We ran a special every day on Iraq where I was embedded with not just U.S. forces, but the Iraqi 2nd Infantry Division. And I think this is on Google Video now, if you look it up. But it's a full half-hour special on Iraq where no one gets shot, where no one's exploding, there are no IEDs. And an examination of a very small part of the country where things are actually going, believe it or not, right. And so to see a picture of Iraq where things are working for half an hour on Al Jazeera, I think would be very surprising to a lot of people who believe they know what Al Jazeera is about.
Was it different for you to be covering troops from the perspective of being a journalist for Al Jazeera International as opposed to being a Marine who is dealing with the press corps, which was your job with the Marines at CENTCOM?
Yeah, to go back to Iraq as a journalist rather than as a Marine was interesting in a number of different ways. First, it was my first time to go into a war zone without a weapon and a number of armed friends around me. And I was surprised at how naked I felt. The other weird thing is, I guess I'm probably the most controversial reporter at the most controversial news network in the world. So to show up to a bunch of military guys and say, hey, I'm with Al Jazeera, one, you have a whole set of issues you need to deal with in about the next 30 seconds before you lose these guys. And then two, to say, yeah, I used to be a Marine public affairs. It could go one or two ways, really good or really bad. Fortunately, the group I was with kind of got it, and they believed they were doing the right thing, and they wanted that story to get out there. So they were absolutely terrific, but it certainly could have went the other way, as I've frequently found out in my job.
Well, tell me more how you do explain yourself to Marines.
Well, it's an evolving process, trying to find the way that works best and quickest, because you don't have a long time to say it. So generally, you say it. You say, I'm with Al Jazeera, which I must, for the first year I was doing this job, I would try to avoid saying that if I was doing a story in the Middle East, in Middle America.
Wait, do you the whole I'm with Al Jazeera International, the English language version, not the Arab language version, it's different, blah, blah, blah?
Well, at first it was, I would call someone in Kansas wanting an interview, and they're like, well, who are you with? Well, international media. Oh, yeah, which one? Yeah, Al Jazeera. and they're like, what? I'm sorry, did you? They say, I'm with Al Jazeera, and there's a look of surprise always, what am I supposed to do when I meet a terrorist kind of thing? And so you got to say, I thought all the same things about Al Jazeera that you're thinking right now. When I was a captain representing Central Command and Tommy Franks, and I was a spokesperson on Al Jazeera. And what I realized first person by being there in the studios was all the things you're thinking now that I used to think too, they're just not true. Here's the truth. And I can tell right there before I go into here's the truth if I got them or not,
So I guess it makes it hard for you in a way, because before you can ask the questions and be the journalist, you have to be the spokesperson for Al Jazeera just to get the interview.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And it becomes even more complicated when, if you're in North Dakota and you have, the local customs and border guy following you around and interrogating everyone you interview, says, was he an American citizen? Did he have a camera? Did he take pictures of things? And of course he took pictures of things. He's a journalist. They were filming. But these kind of local authorities that follow me around wherever I go don't help the pitch any, I have to say.
Why do they follow you around, and how do they even know that you're on the story?
News tends to spread when you show up to a small town and say you're Al Jazeera. Reporters come out to see if you're dressed in, robes, if you have camels. A reporter actually said that to me. I thought you would, have a scarf on your head. And I said, why? I mean, they don't wear, a man wouldn't wear a scarf on regular Al Jazeera. But news just spreads. And then the local sheriff in whatever small town you're in will eventually say that the hairs on the back of his neck rose when he heard Al Jazeera was in town. And he'll call, the local federal official, whoever it is. And in the case of North Dakota, it actually was a Customs and Border Patrol person who will then take on their duty to find out why Al Jazeera is probing the border of North Dakota. And eventually that story will work its way out all the way to Fox News, believe it or not. And what they don't mention is the guy who's probing the open border actually flew there from Washington, D.C., where his studio is located 3 blocks from the White House. But it's kind of an absurd world that at least I live in, and I assume everyone else as well.
Sometimes when you're on Al Jazeera, there's funny misinterpretations of American culture. So I'm going to ask you to tell the Gary Busey story.
I put that in the book just because there are so many cultures coming together at Al Jazeera. All at the same time. It's this mixed mash of things, and everyone has a different take on the same simple story. So I was shooting a pilot show with an actual Al Jazeera reporter, that Arabic Al Jazeera, that is, and we were kind of co-hosting this test pilot show to see how it would work. And one of the subjects came up was a movie called Valley of the Wolves, which I don't think was ever released in America, but it was a huge movie in Turkey, broke all the box office records there. And the plot of the movie had Turkish special agents going into Iraq, and they're captured and abused by American military, and then they uncovered this whole conspiracy of American military where the American military are capturing people, and a Jewish doctor is harvesting the Iraqis' organs and selling them on the open market. And the Jewish doctor is played by Gary Busey. And so my counterpart there on the show that we were hosting said, do you think this will hurt Gary Busey's career? You know, being an A-list actor and playing such a controversial role. And I just laughed and said, well, you know, from the American perspective, Gary Busey is far from an A-list actor. I mean, last thing he did that anyone cared about was Buddy Holly's story in 1978. And since then, he's made a living playing a caricature of himself, essentially. I don't think any publicity would hurt his career, good or bad. You know, he's probably hoping that people are upset about it. At which time, the director of programs, Paul Gibbs, who's very British, came running out from the control room saying, cut, 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 cut. You can't say that. That's slander. They have different rules in England about what's slander than we do in America. They're much stiffer rules. And he said, well, what do you mean with that slander? He said, what you said about Gary Busey? And I said, look, I'm not slandering him. I'm slandering his career. You know, he's far from A-list. And it was just a moment where you realize Paul was coming at it from such a British perspective. I was coming at it from an American perspective. Perspective about, you know, what celebrity is and isn't, and what publicity, bad publicity, will do or not. And Abdurrahim was coming at it from such an Arab perspective. It just made you scratch your head and wonder, boy, how are we ever going to get this ship out to sea?
So how is this particular story resolved? How is Gary Busey described finally?
Well, because it was a pilot show, that show never actually went to air. And so as far as I know, it stayed in with my description of him. But had it ever gone to air, I would imagine they would have asked me to reshoot that.
Well, you've been critical of the military and the U.S. government for having a no-comment position when approached by Al Jazeera, Arabic Al Jazeera. Is that still the case? Do you still think that they do no-comment too often when Al Jazeera comes knocking?
You know, they're schizophrenic about it. Right now, they're actually putting a lot of generals on Al Jazeera through and media offices that they've set up in Dubai. So just recently I've seen interviews with General Caldwell. There's a spokesperson who's really terrific, probably one of the best spokespeople I've ever worked with in Dubai, named Captain Eric Clark. He's been on a number of times. So they are engaging more. But just as an example of kind of how schizophrenic they are, I received a call, this was last year, about a general in Fallujah, a Marine general, who said, I've heard of this guy rushing at Al Jazeera, and I want him here in Fallujah embedded before my time is up. So I started receiving frantic calls from all these public affairs officers in the region trying to track me down. And, you know, they told me, hey, the general wants you to embed. And I said, great, this will be my first time back to Iraq. Terrific. Told the wife, I've packed the bags. Let's go. And it turned out a general in Baghdad said, no way, Al Jazeera is coming. At the time, Al Jazeera Arabic was not allowed in the country, and there was some gray area as to whether Al Jazeera English was the same organization or not, or if they could come and Arabic couldn't. So the first general was operating under the principle that, look, Al Jazeera English is a complete separate news organization. Let's get rushing here. Second general in Baghdad said, absolutely not. There's no way I'm going to have Al Jazeera in the country. So it's, I think, a perfect example of how schizophrenic the institution or the organization can come across on this Jazeera issue. I often have officers who, they tend to fall in two groups. One, they either think Al Jazeera is part of the problem and they're going to be obstructionist. Or two, they think, like it or not, Al Jazeera could be part of the solution, so they're going to be as progressive in engaging it as possible. And the second group is I would say, quickly becoming the majority. And the first group is shriveling down to a smaller and smaller group, or at least less and less powerful.
Is the editorial policy of Al Jazeera International different than the Arab language Al Jazeera? And I'll give you a specific example of what I'm thinking of. I know that on Al Jazeera, the Arabic network, that suicide bombers are usually referred to as martyrs. And that's one of the things that has been most criticized about Al Jazeera. Would the same hold true in a story on the English language version?
No, there's a different policy on that, because the word has a different context and understanding in the two different cultures.
So what's the difference between the Arabic and English version of the word martyr that is behind the editorial policy?
You know, I've heard the discussion more times than I can count, and I'm still not entirely sure why they use the word martyr on Al Jazeera Arabic. They apparently only use it in very limited circumstances, and it is a Palestinian who does that action within the occupied territories, and it has a meaning that goes across the culture, so that anyone that speaks Arabic that lives in that part of the world would refer to what that person did as martyr, or to that person as a martyr. That's just how they would describe it. And for the news organization to not describe it that way would be notable for having not described it that way, because that's the way everyone in that region would describe it. Now, that's not the way people from outside that region would describe that action naturally. And so it would be notable for Al Jazeera English to use that word in describing that same action.
You know, in your book, Mission Al Jazeera, you spend some time talking about the period when you worked at CENTCOM in 2003 and 2004 as a Marine in the press liaison office, talking to the American press and to the Arab press. And you say that some reporters, and I think you single out Fox News reporters, would actually do on-camera briefings with you in which they'd ask you first, what questions should we ask you?
That's true.
How often would that happen?
Only when I would go on camera with them. I can say that they never asked me a tough question through the entire probably 4 months I would go on camera with them. But I have to say, it wasn't just Fox News. Other American networks did it as well. It was a matter of their audience doesn't want to see them, the reporters, be critical of the young troops, particularly not at that time. I mean, MSNBC was packaging their coverage as, our hearts are with you. Do you think you're going to get a really tough question from someone where the banner says, our hearts are with you, underneath your interview? No. So that's not what the viewers wanted. And so that's, you know, clearly what the reporters knew that, and they knew, I think they feared a backlash if they were to ask really critical questions of a young man in uniform.
So when a reporter would say to you, what questions should I ask you, what were some examples you'd give?
You know, the reporter would actually say, do you have any messages to get out today? And I'd say, yeah, sure. I'd just come from a meeting where they gave me a bunch of messages to get out today. You know, and on any given day, it could be weapons of mass destruction, ties to terrorism, regime change, how awful Saddam was, any one of these messages. As a matter of fact, the first special I did for Al Jazeera is called Spin, The Art of Selling War. And I show kind of an insider's view of how war is sold. And the U.S. government's actually used the same reasons to sell war over and over and over again. So they've called at least five modern-day leaders, the modern-day Hitler, Saddam twice, and Noriega, and Ho Chi Minh, and you name it, Milosevic. And then they go into the argument about how the U.S. is, of course, benevolent and doesn't want war, but they're forced into these actions. And then they go into the argument of, and the argument kind of goes down this same line every single time. And what I did that might be different than one would normally see in the press is the first person I indict in this process is myself. I go back and I show I think Johnson and the first Bush and Reagan saying the same things, and then I show me saying it on Fox News while I was at CENTCOM. And in the middle of me talking about how the Iraqis are ready for the Americans to get there and they're tired of this regime and Saddam, and I stop it in the special, and I'm standing in front of it in a suit, and I say, that was me, and I was at CENTCOM, and I helped sell that war, and I said things that turned out to not be true. And what I didn't realize was it was less about the truth and more about a tried-and-true method of how to sell war. But in that method, it's a partnership. It's not just the government selling it. It's the media buying it because they know what their audience wants to see. And so these things are they're a bit of hand-in-hand in this. At least that's how it was in 2003. I think it's a different environment now.
You left the Marine Corps in October of 2004. Do you still feel like a Marine? Are there things about being a Marine that stay with you?
You know, days ago, I was deep in the Colombian jungle with these guys called junglas, and they're They're an elite police force in Colombia that go out and blow up cocaine labs and bring in high-value targets from the FARC. And they're modeled after the U.S. military. They carry U.S. weapons. They wear U.S.-looking uniforms. I spent about 3 days lying around in Blackhawks in the jungle and hiking up and down mountains to find these cocaine labs and blow them up for the story I'm doing. I have to say, on a certain level, and this probably affects my objectivity, felt really good to be back with guys suffering under those kind of conditions. And yeah, the Marine came out in me every bit. It felt really good, and I could tell inside, I think I will always be a Marine. That said, that doesn't mean I'm easy on my stories with them. As a matter of fact, I don't really cover the Marines much. It's kind of like a bad relationship, I think. They all the other services are pretty proactive about bringing me in, engaging me, and wanting me to go out to do stories. The Marines just haven't come calling, and I have to be honest, I don't know if I've been as proactive about going calling on that door either. I think we need to get over our feelings first, but I think I will always, at heart, be a Marine.
Well, Josh Rushing, really good to talk with you again. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Terry. I always enjoy it.
Josh Rushing is the author of Mission Al Jazeera.